Mr. Koyama's Comet by Walter John Williams. Part 1, March 1983. In June of 1981, a third-generation Mitsubishi executive, Koyama Ido, took his retirement amid the extravagant praise and well-earned respect of his peers and underlings. He got extravagantly drunk, paid off his mistress, and the very next day put into operation a plan he had been working on for almost 40 years. He moved with his wife to a house he had built on the island of Shikoku. The house was in rugged terrain on the southern part of the island and was difficult to access. It cost Mr. Koyama an extraordinary amount of money to get the telephone and utilities put in, and the house was built in an unusual style, with a flat roof that would not weather well. But to Mr. Koyama, none of that mattered. What mattered was that the house was so remote there was little light pollution, that it looked east to the Pacific and southwest to the Bungo Channel, and that the seeing was better over water. In a hutch built on his flat roof, Mr. Koyama installed a 14-inch reflective telescope that he had built with his own hands. During good weather, he would trundle this out onto the platform and gaze into the sky, at stars and planets and distant galaxies, and he would take careful, studied photographs of them that he would develop in his darkroom and later hang on his walls. But simply watching the sky wasn't quite enough. Mr. Koyama wanted more. He wanted something up there to bear his name. Every day, therefore, just after sunset and just before dawn, Mr. Koyama would go onto his roof with a pair of Fujinon naval binoculars that he had purchased in Chiba from a starving ex-submarine captain in 1946. Patiently, wrapped in a warm wool overcoat, he would focus their 5-inch objective lenses on the sky and inspect it carefully. He was looking for comets. In December of 1982, he found one, but unfortunately had to share the credit with Seki, a comet finder of some reputation who had discovered the comet some days previous. Mr. Koyama was chagrined by missing Seki Koyama 1982P by some 72 hours, but kept looking, vowing increased dedication and vigilance. He wanted one all to himself. March of 1983 opened cold and drizzly. Mr. Koyama shivered under his hat and overcoat as he scanned the sky night after night. A bout of influenza kept him off the roof till the 22nd, and he was annoyed to discover that Seki and Ikaya had together discovered a new comet while he was laid up. Increased dedication and vigilance, he vowed again. The morning of the 23rd, Mr. Koyama finally found his comet. There, near the not-yet-risen sun, he saw a fuzzy ball of light. He sneezed, gripped the Fujinons tightly, and gazed up again to confirm the sighting. Nothing else should be in that part of the sky. His heart pounding, Mr. Koyama descended to his study and picked up the telephone. He called the telegraph office and sent a wire to the International Astronomical Union. Telegrams are de rigueur with the IAU. A telephone call would be considered vulgar. Offering vague prayers to a host of gods in which he did not profess actual belief, Mr. Koyama returned to the roof with the strange feeling that his comet would have disappeared while he wasn't looking. He breathed a sigh of relief. The comet was still there. The confirmation from the IAU came 2 days later, and confirmed as well what Mr. Koyama already knew from his own observations. Koyama 1983D was a real whizzer. It was flying from the sun like a bat out of hell. Further reports indicated all sorts of anomalies. A routine spectrographic analysis showed that Koyama 1983D was a decidedly odd duck indeed. Instead of the normal hydroxyls and carbon, Mr. Koyama's comet registered large amounts of oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen, carbon, silicon, and various mineral salts. In short, all that was necessary for organic life. A storm of controversy immediately arose over Koyama's comet. How anomalous was it? And was organic life possible in the cold and dusty ranges of the Oort cloud? Mr. Koyama was interviewed by teams from the BBC, NBC, and Soviet television. He was profiled in Time magazine. He offered modest statements about his amateur status and his astonishment as to all the fuss, but he was inwardly more pleased than he had been over anything, even the birth of his eldest son. His wife observed him walking about the house with the strut of a 20-year-old, and the broad grin of a clown. Every night and morning, Mr. Koyama was on the roof. It was going to be hard to top this, but he was going to try. Part 2, October 1985. Astronomy was getting more attention these days, what with the reappearance of P. Halley 1982i, but Mr. Koyama maintained his equilibrium in the face of the turmoil. He was an old hand now. He had discovered 4 additional comets since Koyama 1983d, and was assured of a prominent place in cometary history. Each of his comets had been the so-called Koyama-type comets, with their weird spectrography and their bat-out-of-hell speed. Koyama-type comets were being discovered by all manner of amateurs, always hugging the sun. The controversy had not died down, had in fact intensified. Was it possible that the solar system was passing through a storm of comets containing organic elements, or was this a fairly ordinary occurrence that somehow hadn't been noticed till now? Fred Hoyle smiled and issued an I-told-you-so statement, reiterating his theory of cosmic seedlings containing organic life, and even his bitterest opponents conceded that the annoying old Yorkshireman might have won this round. Mr. Koyama received many invitations to speak. He declined them all. Time speaking meant time away from his rooftop observatory. Currently, the record number of comet discoveries was 9, held by an Australian minister. Mr. Koyama was going to win the honor for Japan or die trying. Part 3, late June 1986. There, another comet, barely visible, chasing the sun about the sky. That made 6 altogether. Mr. Koyama descended to his study and called the telegraph office. His heartbeat increased. He needed confirmation on this one desperately. Not confirmation of the sighting, but of the spectrography. Mr. Koyama was climbing the charts of comet sighters, and this was in a period of a nervous, increased watching of the sky. People were looking up a lot these days, hoping to find the dark, non-reflective swarm parent that was presumably lurking nearby. But the prospect of number 6 wasn't what excited Mr. Koyama. He was getting fairly blasé about finding new comets these days. What he needed was confirmation of his new theory. Mr. Koyama accepted the congratulations of the telegrapher and put down the telephone. He gazed with a frown at the chart he had on his desktop. It suggested something that he suspected he was the only one to notice. It was the kind of thing that was only noticed by people who spent their nights on rooftops, counting the hours and days, shrugging off the dew, and staring at bits of the night through long refractive lenses. The Koyama-style comet seemed to possess not only weird organics and uncommon velocity, but an even stranger periodicity. Every 3 months, more or less, a new Koyama-type comet appeared near the sun. It was as if the Oort cloud were shrugging off a ball of organic compounds to mark each new Terran season. Smiling, Mr. Koyama savored the idea of the sensation his observation would cause, the panic among cosmographers, trying to work out new formulas for explaining it. His place in astronomy would be assured. Koyama comets were proving as regular as planets. In a way, he thought, it was lucky the swarm had landed, because otherwise the observation might have been made earlier. The thought echoed slowly in his mind. Mr. Koyama's smile turned to a frown. He looked at his chart and performed some mathematics in his head. His frown deepened. He took out a pocket calculator and confirmed his calculations. His heart lurched. He sat down quickly. The swarm. A tough, kilometers-long shell protecting vast quantities of biomass. Something like that would be vulnerable to changes in temperature. If it got near the sun, it would have to bleed off excess heat somehow. The result would be a fluorescence not unlike that of a comet. Suppose the swarm were in a fast orbit with the sun at one focus and the Earth at the other. With the Earth in motion relative to the sun, the orbit would be complicated, but not impossible. But with all the sightings of Koyama-type comets, it should be possible to pinpoint the approximate location of the swarm. A few 100 hydrogen-tipped missiles would then end the War of the Worlds in bang-up style.
Motherfucker,
breathed Mr. Koyama, a strong word he had learned from GIs during the occupation. Who the hell should he tell about this, he wondered. The IAU is the wrong forum. The Prime Minister? The Jitai? No. They would have no reason to believe an obscure retired businessman who called up raving about the swarm. No doubt they got enough of those calls as it was. He would call up his comrades from Mitsubishi. They had enough clout to see that he got heard. As he reached for the phone and began to dial, Mr. Koyama felt his heart begin to sink. His place in astronomical history was assured, he knew, but not as he wanted. Instead of six comets, all he had discovered was a damned lump of yeast.